Welcome back to the Rav Hirshon Parsha podcast series on OU Torah. My name is Michael Gutman. This week we'll be studying Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parshas Tetzaveh. And the first half of this week's Parsha focuses on the big day kahuna. And I want to take some time to go through Rav Hirsch's thorough treatment of the big day kahuna, the role they play, the various symbols that each of the items of clothing stand for, and how they come together as a whole to convey a very specific message. And Rav Hirsch begins by saying that the function of the Big Day Kahuna is really twofold. Obviously, Rav Hirsch reads all these items of clothing as symbols, representing a specific message, but Rav Hirsch writes that the function of the messages of the message conveyed by the Big Day Kahuna is twofold, because the message is conveyed both to the people viewing the Kohanim, the outsiders who are watching the Avodah, but also to the Kohanim themselves, and it's a message to themselves, and it conveys to them the ideals to which they should strive. And Rav Hirsch proves this point through the halacha, which states that there can be no chatzitza, nothing in between the kohen and his clothing. It must be directly on his body. And that indicates that the message of the clothing applies to him as well, not just to the onlooker. But Rav Hirsch makes clear that the clothing conveys the character, the goals for the Kohen and for the people in their self-development. And it's not just beautiful clothing, it's not just a uniform, but the clothing is meant to convey specific messages about who we should be as a people, what our goals should be, what we should strive for. And that's also how Rav Hirsch explains the breakdown between the clothing of the Kohen Hedyot and the additional clothing worn by the Kohen Gadol. And Rav Hirsch writes that while the Kohen Gadol's clothing represent the ideal, represent the ultimate goal that we have in mind for our self-development, the clothing Kohen Hedyot represent the qualities that are necessary as the initial steps to arrive at that ideal. And he writes that this is seen through the components of the clothing, the big day of the Kohen Hedyot, which are primarily linen. And this is something we touched on briefly at the end of last week's shiur when we talked about the chatzer. And Rav Hirsch writes how the white linen surrounding the enclosure of the Mishkan indicated a sense of purity, a sense of sur me rav, avoiding all bad things and really cleansing oneself from all negative influences, just the avoidance of evil. That's the symbolism of white. And that again here is how Rav Hirsch views the clothing of the Kohen Hedyot. Rav Hirsch further notes that many of these begadim use the word bad to refer to linen. For example, the michnasayim, the pants, are referred to as michnasay bad, and the ksones is it as well. Actually, that not the ksones, but it's the michnasayim that are referred to as bad, and he indicates that bad is the Gemara and Yuma tells us that linen is called bad because it is davar ha'ola min hakarka bad bad. It is an item which grows from the ground one at a time, meaning individually, separately pointing up, each stem coming up from the ground. And the Hirsch says that the bad, the linen, symbolizes this idea of striving upward, pointing towards the heavens, climbing to the top. But it's also the fact that they grow as badim individually, And this is really what we are looking for in the initial step towards developing ourselves to and our character towards Hashem and His goals, is to separate ourselves from all the evil influences, to separate ourselves from all the ideas that are antithetical to our calling, and to really to take ourselves away from them, to grow apart. And that's the idea of the bad, to rise up on our own, individually, towards Hashem. And so, the white color, of course, of the linen represents the purity that we discussed with regards to the chatzar. And similar to what we said over there by the chatzar, how the chatzar represents the sur meira, and then the colors of the colors of the tapestries, the yerios in the heichal itself, represent striving higher, more active, active striving towards Hashem, more of the aseh tov part of what is expected of us. We have a similar idea here, where the kohen hedot's white clothing represents the sur meira, the initial step towards the ideal of the kohen gadol's colorful clothing involving all the materials, which represents the aseh tov. But Rav Hirsch shows how each of the clothing represent a very specific area of this endeavor. For example, the michnasayim represents purity in the area of what Rav Hirschreich calls the vegetative nature of man. And we discussed the split between the vegetative nature and the animal nature in Parashas Mishpatim, when we talked about basar b'chalav, and how chalav represents the vegetative nature of the animal, because that governs reproduction and nourishment, whereas the animal nature was more for movement, muscles, and the like. So the michnasayim represent purity for the vegetative aspect. They cover the pants. They cover the lower half of the body, and that is an area which requires purity. It's an area where one is easily led astray. The ksones covers the upper body, and that represents purity in the animal nature of man, as Rav Hirsch calls it, because it covers the torso and it covers the legs, and in addition to the lower half of the body below the michnasayim, it covers the torso, it covers the arms, it covers the area, the muscular areas, the areas which are used for motion and for all activity. And even sensation, Rav Hirsch writes. And so we want to apply purity to that aspect of our lives as well. And that's the idea of the ksonas. The migba'as is the hat worn by the kohanim, kohen hedyot, and that hat is shaped as a cone, pointing upwards towards the heavens. And that's a similar idea to the bad that Rav Hirsch talked about. Just directing our goals upward in a very visible portrayal of the symbol that we are describing, the overall symbol. And of course, the linen, the white on the head, of course, represents purity in thought. So these are we discussed this in Mishpatim, like I said, by the Basar B'chalav, how there are three layers of three natures that we have: the vegetative nature, the animal nature, and then finally our neshama, our spiritual nature. And so here we have the michnasayim covering the lower half of the body, the ksonas covering the upper part of the body, and then the migba'as on the head. So really applying purity, applying this sur meira attitude towards all aspects of our lives, and applying it to all our various natures, as represented by these three parts of the body. Versh also adds that the ksones is referred to as a ksones tashbeitz, and that this word tashbeitz is also used as a verb when the pasuk says v'shibatz talks, it's a ksones shesh. And typically this is understood to refer to the fact that ksones was made with some sort of box-like stitch, and Tashbetz is understood to mean boxes. And we find a similar word earlier in the parasha with regards to the choshen and the ephod, where the settings for the jewels, for the stones, are referred to as mishbitzos. So tashbetz is a similar word for mishbitzos. It seems, and just as those mishbitzos refers to settings for the stones, tashbetz seems to mean that the ksonas was made in such a way where it was formed of small squares, which may have even been hollowed out a little bit in the way, like a setting, like a jewelry setting, and that's the way in which the ksonas is made, composed of many little boxes like this. And so Rav Hirsch says that the settings-like design of this ksonas indicate this very same idea that we are seeing in the linen garments in general, in that a setting is something that contains something of greater importance. It's something that's there to serve something higher. And so the fact that the ksones is made out of these little boxes, these little settings, indicates a readiness to grow, a readiness to accept a higher calling. And really, by wearing the ksones, the Kohen shows that he is ready to be an instrument, Rehersh's words, an instrument in the service of something higher. As a setting is just a holder for the precious stone, which is really the highlight of the jewel, the garment that it is a piece of. The setting is just an ancillary part of that enables it. And so really this fits with the general idea that Rav Hirsch is seeing in the begadim of the Kohen Hedyot, and it expresses a willingness to purify oneself in order to climb to higher levels, in order to grow closer to Hashem. The act of divorcing oneself from all evil is not in itself striving towards Hashem. It is the initial step. And the Ksonesh Tashbetz, the design of that of Tashbetz, indicates that idea. The idea of being ready to of taking this step in order to be able to serve as a stepping stone to something greater. So that covers the three garments of the Kohen Hedyot, the Michnasayim, Ksones, and Migba'as. The final item of clothing worn by the Kohen Hedyot is the Avnet, the belt. And this Avnet is different from the other three because it is the only article of clothing worn by the Kohen Hedyot which has the other colored threads in it, the Treles, the Argamon, Tolas, Shani, and so on. Also of note is that the Avnet worn by the Kohen Hedyot was the same as the Avnet worn by the Kohen Gadol. It's the only item of clothing. The Kohen Gadol wore these four begadim plus more. So we see how the idea is that the Avnet, the belt represents, of Hirschreis, is the belt represents one is girding himself, preparing for action. And so the article of clothing that represents readiness for action has the colors in it because it presents the Kohen Hedyot, while of course his focus is on the white clothing, the purity they represent. His focus is on the Sur Meira, the initial step, but he also is girding himself with the ideal. He is preparing himself to strive for higher levels. And he maintains this thought in his mind at all times, even while taking initial steps. Those initial steps are being done for the purpose of climbing higher once he's ready to move to the next level. And that ultimate goal is kept front and center in the Kohen's mind at all times, so that even while wearing the white clothing, there is a small garment with color on it, and it's a specific garment that represents a readiness for action, so that these actions that he's taking now, the Sur Meira, is a means to an end. It is not the end in itself. Like I said before, that Sur Meira in itself is not enough. but it's a way of, it's the necessary first step in getting to the ultimate goal. And that is how Rav Hirsch looks at the begadim of the Kohen Hedyot. Now, moving on to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol, Rav Hirsch notes that the first garment to go on top of these white pieces of clothing is the Me'il. And the Me'il represents the second step, the intermediate stage in climbing towards Hashem, and that is subordinating all our abilities towards to the divine goal. In other words, it's not, again, it's the intermediary step between avoidance of evil and then moving into action to actively become closer to Hashem, but it's the first step of, now that we've cleansed the various aspects of our nature, we are, all the parts of the body, the upper body and the lower body, are now clothed in this me'il with the, of the color blue, the color blue representing the heavens. It's the color of the divine. It's the color, it's now we are subjugating all the various forces that have been purified and cleansed, and now they are all being ready to be used in the completion of the divine task. Rav Hirsch says that's why the Torah places an emphasis on the hem of the neck and how that has to be close fitting and cannot be torn. The idea of Hirsch writes is that the neck contains the trachea and the esophagus, trachea representing the upper part of the body, the esophagus, nutrition is the vegetative aspect. And so at the junction of the animal and the vegetative natures, it's important to those be enclosed by the me'il at the place where the two of them are combined. And this me'il also bears symbols for show the rewards of the accomplishment of this task in the pomegranates. Pomegranates are a symbol of mitzvos, because we know of the many seeds they contain. So they're symbolic of doing many mitzvos. And the idea being that at the hem, at the bottom of this me'il, if the idea represented by this me'il is carried out, then we can be assured that it will bear fruit. And not just any fruit, but pomegranates, which carry many seeds inside of them. Also on the me'il are the bells. Now, it's a matter, there's a question of what are these bells for? And the Torah tells us that it's v'nishma kolo b'va'oel ha'kodesh l'fnei Hashem u'v'teso v'lo yamus. That the purpose of the bells is that his sound should be heard when he enters the sanctuary before Hashem and when he leaves, and therefore he shall not die. And the question is, who's supposed to hear it? So the Ramban, Rav Hirsch quotes the Ramban, who says that the idea is because it's inappropriate to enter the palace of the king without first announcing oneself, and to go in unannounced is punishable by death. Think Esther in the Megillah, in Perek Dalet, where she protests she cannot go to the king unannounced, or she is liable to be killed, and how she is miraculously spared from this punishment in Perek Hay. Similarly, Ramban says that's the function of the bells. Rav Hirsch says that he suggests a different approach, and suggests that the function of the bells is to give a sound for the people to hear, so that the Kohen Gadol is performing his avoda, even though he's in the Heichal and cannot be seen, but the people hear him and take note of that he is doing avoda, and take it to heart and think about the ideas behind his avoda and contemplate that, and hopefully has an effect on them. And that's why Rav Hirsch writes that it's also the pasuk stresses that his sound should be heard not just when he enters the kodesh, but also uvtseiso when he departs. And Rav Hirsch says that it's important that the ideas of the avoda are not just with the Kohen and with the people when he goes in to do the avoda, but also when he leaves, it should stay with them even after his departure. And Rav Hirsch writes, and I'll quote the line here, because I think it's powerful. He writes, "The departure from the sanctuary is not only as important as the entry, it is even more important. Whether indeed and how you stood before God are shown not by how you went into the sanctuary, but by how you came out." It's a powerful statement he makes, that the way you come out shows what you had in mind when you were there. And so while the bells help the Kohen remember that he's not just there for himself, but for the people listening to him and for the people on whose behalf he is serving, and also helps the people hear him and take this to heart. And this is another message conveyed by this Me'il, which subordinates all of our human power and abilities to the service of Hashem. And finally, on top of that Me'il go the Ephod and the Choshen, and they really go together. And the Ephod of Hirsch writes, covers again all the parts of the body, the upper part and the lower part, but here it is composed of all the multiple colors which represent the different aspects of life. And the idea now represented by the Ephod and the Choshen is that we are to marshal all our abilities in the service of the Torah. The Choshen represents the Torah. The Urim V'Tumim, Rav Hirsch writes, that Urim V'Tumim means light, or and perfection, Tumimus. So what is light and is the epitome of perfection? That is the Torah. So when the Kohen Gadol carries the Choshen on his heart, he is in effect carrying around the representation of the Aron that lies in the Kodesh Kedoshim, which we do not see, but he carries it on him at all times. He is a walking embodiment of the ideal of the Torah. And so the Ephod is always attached to the Choshen, because the Ephod, representing girding oneself with strength to act, the Aseh Tov, the goal of that Aseh Tov is towards the Torah, towards the Choshen, which it is always attached to. And he wears this Choshen on his heart, because that is where our heart is to be directed towards the Torah at all times. He says that's why it's called the Choshen HaMishpat, because Mishpat represents, Mishpat means justice, it means something that is appropriate. And so he says that the Torah is our Mishpat. Rav Hirsch writes, and I'll quote again, "Mishpat b'nei Yisrael then denotes that which is fitting for Israel and in accordance with its calling, that which is destined for it and to which it should aspire in keeping with its calling." So when the pasuk says that v'nasa Aharon is mishpat b'nei Yisrael al libo lefnei Hashem tamid, it means Aharon will carry on his heart that which is befitting Klal Yisrael, the Torah, which is our mission. And that Choshen serves as a reminder, and its connection to the Ephod joins it together with a representation of action, because the Torah in theory is not sufficient, and action dedicated to some amorphous goal that is not Torah is not correct. But we marry action and Torah goals together as we connect the Ephod to the Choshen and put that on top of everything. That is the final step in our climb towards Hashem. So again, it begins with Sur Meiran, the purity, cleansing all the aspects of our nature. It then is, we subordinate all that to Hashem, and then once we have fully assimilated these ideas, we then begin actively serving Hashem. And that's the Kohen Gadol, the ideal Jew. Finally, the eighth piece of clothing is the mitznefes, his hat, which is different. The mitznefes goes together with the tzitz. Those are seven and eight. The mitznefes, the hat of the Kohen Gadol, is flat, not pointed, because he is already the symbol of completion, that he is on a higher plane. The hat is connected to the tzitz. It sits on a piece of gold, and as we talked about last week's shiur about gold, the material gold is considered to be pure and unchangeable, and he wears this piece of gold on his forehead, which is Kodesh LaHashem, because the bottom line, we cannot let our minds lose sight of the fact that the goals of everything that we do is that everything should be Kodesh LaHashem, and that is attached to the hat, with the flat hat, which is a symbol of completion, because when we've joined our thoughts are focused on Kodesh LaHashem, that's when we've truly reached the complete perfection that we're aiming for. So, just again, to step back and look at the bigger picture, now that we've gone through thoroughly Rav Hirsch's understanding of all the Big Day Kahuna, we see how these articles of clothing carry an important message for all those who see them, not just those who wear them, in terms of step-by-step manual to how we should attempt to become closer to Hashem at the various steps and how they apply to the various aspects of human nature, and our final goal. And so when one came to the Mishkan or Mikdash to participate, to be a part of the Avodah, whether a person bringing a Karban and the Kohen was doing it on his behalf, or the Kohanim who were there all the time, they were constantly made aware of these ideas just by virtue of the fact of the clothing that the Kohen was wearing. Again, it wasn't just beautiful clothing, that they had some fashion designer, some divine fashion design, that this is what looks nice, but the clothing convey a very specific message to the one who enters the Mikdash. And Rehersh says also that the ideas is very of the Big Dikuna are parallel to the ideas of the various steps of the Karbanos regarding the different aspects of human nature that are symbolized through various avodos, whether it's burning certain parts of the Mizbeach. But it's beyond the scope of this particular shir to get into that. I'd rather stay focused on the Big Tikkun. When we get to Sefer VaYikra, we can talk about how the different aspects of the avoda relate to these ideas as well, and then perhaps we can come back and look back at the Big Tikkun and show the parallels. But again, this is really another one of Rav Hirsch's beautiful expositions about a certain symbol, how he really has this overarching idea of what the Big Tikkun should represent, and then draws this theme throughout all the small details of the various begadim and their relationship to one another and the relationship to the Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedyot. And then we see a beautiful idea develop throughout this parasha of what these begadim are meant to represent and the ideas that they are meant to teach us. And I want to jump ahead towards the end of the parasha. After the Big Tikkahuna, the parasha spends significant time going through the agenda for the Miluim, the 7 days of inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. And in the final pasuk of that section, in Perek Chof Tes, pasuk Lamed Zayin, the Torah tells us that after they dedicate the Mishkan, V'ayoha Mizbeach Kodesh Kodashim, Kohanogea B'Mizbeach Yikdash. The Mizbeach will be holy of holies. Anything that touches the Mizbeach shall be sanctified, will be holy itself. So Rav Hirsch asks, what's the meaning of the phrase Kodesh Kadoshim? We always translate it Holy of Holies. But we typically think of it as a superlative. It means the most holy objects. But Rav Hirsch says that's not so. And he brings other examples of phrases that are doubled, similar to Kodesh Kadoshim. And he shows how they all mean that this item is holy compared, this item is, or in this case it would mean, Kodesh Kodesh would mean holy compared to other sacred items. For example, he gives from Parshas Noach, Eved Avodim Yela Echov. It doesn't mean the lowliest slave, it means a slave of those who are slaves. Or another example is Melech Malchei HaMelechim. He's the king of those who are the kings to others. So this phrase Kodesh Kodashim means more like Holy of Holies, in that it is a sacred item when compared to those that are Kodesh. What this means, refers us further, is that the Kodesh Kodashim are the source of the Kedusha for those things that are just Kodesh. Right, the items that are Kodesh are a source of Kedusha for our daily lives, and they derive their Kedusha in turn from the source of all Kedusha, which is the Kodesh Kodashim. It's source Kedusha for all those that are just plain Kodesh. And Rav Hirsch knows that we have this idea of Kodesh and Kodesh Kodashim in two spheres. One is the physical space of the Mishkan. We have the Kodesh Kodashim where the Aron is, and the Kodesh, which is where the Shulchan Menorah and Mizbech Ketores are. We have a similar breakdown by Karbanos as well. We have Kodshei Kodshim, which are the Ola, the Chatos, and the Asham. And these are the the Tier 1 Karbanos. And then you have the Tier 2 Karbanos, the Kodshim Kalim, which are the Bechor Maaser Pesach and the Shlamim. So reverse shows how they go together. These items that we call Kodesh Kodashim are related to a person's actions. As far as a physical space, the Kodesh Kodashim in the Mishkan houses the Aron and the Torah, which which relates to how we are meant to act. It teaches us how to live our lives. Similarly, the karbanos that are kodshe kodshim are the chatas and asham, which are meant to atone for things that we did wrong, for our actions, and the ola, which is also meant to convey a message of striving higher and higher actively. So the ola, the chatas and asham, pertain to our actions, whereas on the flip side, the things we refer to as kodesh or kachim kalim, refer shows, pertain more to our fate, to our lot in life. The heichal in the Mishkan contains the shulchan and the menorah, which refer to parnasa, chachma, things that we are granted from Hashem. We ask Hashem to bestow brachos upon us. Bechor maaser pesach, in terms of the kachim kalim karbanos, bechor maaser pesach. Well, bechor maaser are a contribution from one's assets that one has been blessed with by Hashem. Shlomim is when one consecrates one's lot in life. One expresses a feeling of shalom with where he stands in his life at that point in time. And the Pesach also is a matter of entrusting our fate to Hashem. We talked about this in Parshas Bo a little bit. Matter of how when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they brought a Karban Pesach to give themselves over as Hashem's flock, represented by the sheep of the Pesach, and adopt Hashem as their shepherd in life. So the Kodashim pertains more to our actions, and the Kodashim Kalim, the Kodesh, pertains more to what we have been granted from Hashem in life. More what we receive passively than what we do actively. Now, the lesson to learn from this breakdown of Hirsch says is that the sanctifying actions that we can do, when we act in a way of Kedusha or do things that are the right thing, that then spreads Kedusha to what we have been given in our lives. It is, and so to quote from what Rav Hirsch writes here, he says, "What emerges from the foregoing is that the consecration of actions, i.e., active man's commitment to the fulfillment of God's commandments, is the main foundation and basis of the sanctuary, and is the source of the consecration of all of man's other relations. In other words, this consecration is Kodesh HaKodoshim, the basis and source of the sanctification of all other sacred things. The sanctification of the passive side of man, who receives everything from God's hand, is of value only if beforehand man commits himself along with everything he will receive from God to the fulfillment of God's Torah." In other words, what all that we have, and we talk about imbuing everything that we have with Kedusha, but that's a non-starter unless we act in a way of Kedusha. If we act in a way of Kedusha, then we will see the difference in what we have. We can then use what we've been given towards those purposes as well. And that's where Hirsch writes that all the karbanos of the day were sandwiched between two olos, the karban tamid shel shachar, karban tamid shel bin arbayim. The olas atamid was the first karban of the day and the last karban of the day, and everything else is in between. And he writes that's because we may bring other kachim kalim in between, but those only receive their kedusha through the ideas conveyed by the ola. That comes first, the Kodesh Kodashim. There always has to be a Kodesh Kodashim first, because that's the foundation and the source of all Kedusha for all everything else that we have. Now, the Mizbeach, upon which these Karbanos are brought, Rav Hirsch says, is really a representation of the Aron itself. Because the Aron is tucked away in the Kodesh Kodashim, we don't see it. But the Mizbeach is aligned directly opposite the Aron in the Chatzer. The fire on top of it represents the divine fire of Torah. And and the Mizbeach, where we bring our Karbanos, is our way of doing some sort of tangible representation of the symbol of sanctifying our actions through our Karbanos. And through the Karbanos, we can assimilate these ideas to strive closer to Hashem. It's called the Mizbeach HaOlah, writes Rav Hirsch, because its primary Kedusha comes from the Kodesh Kadoshim, from the sanctification of our actions. And through that Kedusha, we can then add Kedusha to that which we have been given from Hashem. Now, Rav Hirsch continues to explain the second half of that pasuk, which is Kohen Ogea B'Mizbeach Yikdash, that anything which comes in contact with the Mizbeach also has Kedusha attached to it. And Rav Hirsch says this is just a natural outcome of coming into contact with something of Kedusha. The practical ramification of the halacha is that if karbanos in certain circumstances end up on top of the Mizbeach, even though they shouldn't really have been placed there, we do not remove them. They stay there because they've been granted a certain amount of Kedusha just by being in coming contact with the top of the Mizbeach. And Rav Hirsch writes, why is this so? And let me quote what he says. Rav Hirsch writes, in Judaism, the whole concept of holiness is inseparably connected with sanctifying. Nothing becomes holy so that holiness should be concentrated in it, while all else is left to the realm of the unsanctified. Everything becomes holy in order to sanctify. So if the Mizbeach is a source of Kedusha for us, that means that it will be Mekadesh everything that it touches. It spreads its Kedusha. An object of Kedusha doesn't bottle that up inside. An object of Kedusha shares that Kedusha with everything that it touches, everything that it comes in contact with. And this is really a powerful lesson to us in our own lives, that if we want to turn ourselves into people who have Kedusha, what that means is not just, that Kedusha is not a goal to strive for just for ourselves, because Kedusha by definition is something that spills over to others, to those that we come in contact with. It's not something we can bottle up inside and reserve for ourselves only, but rather we should be mekadshei shem shamayim and share that Kedusha around with those around us. Now, why can we not take anything off of Mizbeach that didn't belong there? So what's important to understand to be able to grasp Rav Hirsch's reason for this is the nature of this halacha, that the way that the halacha defines it is im alu lo yerdu, if these pieces of meat ended up on the Mizbeach, they are not removed. When is that true? That's true in a situation that's called shepsulo bakodesh, when the disqualification took place in the mikdash as part of the carbon process. In other words, it's something which was a kosher carbon but became tame or became nosar, or other examples might be if it was the shechita was done improperly or the zrika was done improperly, whatever it might be. Those are instances where the carbon was kosher, but during the process of bringing the carbon, something went awry. In that case, since the carbon was done what could have been done properly and was done in the right way, had it been done the right way, then once it goes, that's called psulo bakodesh, and once the carbon goes on the Mizbeach, even wrongly, because it is disqualified, but even if it went up wrongly, it stays. However, something that is intrinsically invalid, whether it's a type of animal whether the animal itself is invalid because, let's say, it's a trefa, or if it's not old enough, or let's say it's something that was worshipped as an avodah zara. In those situations, since it's intrinsically possible, so then even if it goes on the Mizbeach, it must be brought down. With that understanding, now we can see how Rav Hirsch, explains the difference. He says that when it comes to things that are psula bakodesh, where it's just a matter of a procedural disqualification, so then if we took it down, it wouldn't be clear why we're taking it down, and it would convey the message that for whatever reason there is some aspect of human nature that cannot be absorbed, that cannot be suffused with Kedusha. Certain certain parts of the human personality cannot be devoted to Hashem. They just don't belong in the Mizbeach. There's the part of our nature that can be sanctified when subjugated to or subdued before the divine will, and certain parts that are so antithetical to serving Hashem that we just have to keep those away from the Kedusha. But that's not true. We know that for the most part, our human nature can that we can sanctify every part of who we are by devoting it to the service of Hashem. However, there are certain things that are completely antithetical. There are certain things that are puzzle intrinsically. Those things the Golem's Be'ach must be taking off, because for those the disqualification is so ingrained in its nature that must come off, and that indicates that there are certain ideas out there in the world, certain ideas and aspirations that just don't belong on the Mizbeach, don't belong in the service of Hashem. They have no place in our lives. Certain things, not ideas that are intrinsic to us. Our human nature can certainly be ennobled by the Mizbeach and by the Torah, but certain ideas from the outside are pasul. That's what they are, and so there are certain intrinsic psulim that don't belong in the Mizbeach. Even if they're put on there, they cannot be sanctified. This doesn't really get into determining which is which and what ideas fall into which category. But just it's important to know that the range of what can be sanctified is broader than we think, but it is not without certain limits, and that's the split between im olu lo yerdu applying to kol shepsula b'kodesh, but not necessarily applying to everything, because some things just will never belong on the mizbeach, and that's the idea of kol hanogea b'mizbeach yikdash. Just to close, one final short thought on the following psukim, which come next in the parsha. After describing the inauguration ceremony, the Torah goes on to describe briefly the avoda of the karban tamid, the karban that was brought every day, one sheep in the morning, one sheep in the afternoon. And it's connected with a vav hachibor, the connecting vav. The Torah says, after finishing talking about the inauguration, and then says, v'zeh asher ta'asem ha'mizbeach, and this is what you shall bring upon the mizbeach, and goes on to talk about the karban tamid, connecting it back to the previous parsha. And here Rav Hirsch has a powerful thought. Rav Hirsch says that it's not in the construction or the inauguration of the Mishkan that brings the divine presence down, but the ideals and the goals of the Mikdash find their realization in the daily dedication to the goals expressed by the Mishkan. Without the daily avoda of the Karban Tamid, a daily renewal of dedication to Hashem, the Mishkan's worthless. Yes, it's a fancy building that you built, down to every single fine minute detail of the construction, and all the clothes are done just so, just as Hashem commanded. And we had this big pomp and circumstance, big week-long ceremony inaugurating our use of the Mishkan. But if it's then abandoned from that point on, and the messages are not taken to heart, then it's not worth what it's made of. It serves no purpose. The realization of the goals in the Mishkan are found in the daily dedication of the Karban Tamid. And that's why all of this is connected. And now, once you've done all that, and this is how you should do, this is what the avoda you should do, and this is what really makes a Mishkan. The Mishkan itself does not bring the Shekhinah down. It enables the achievement of this goal, of this ideal. Finally, one other idea Rav Hirsch talks about with the Karban Tamid is the fact that the Karban Tamid is brought from sheep. And Rav Hirsch has an interesting comment here where he hints to an idea that the Karban Tamid represents a reenactment of Pesach Mitzrayim every day. Every day we dedicate ourselves to Hashem as the sheep of his flock and adopt Hashem as our shepherd. But and we shouldn't think that was a past historical event and it never applies again. But every day we commit ourselves to the ideals that we felt our liberation from Mitzrayim, when we first became the people of Hashem, and every day we once again renew those bonds with Hashem as His nation, by bringing what is basically the same thing as a Karban Pesach, but bringing it as a Karban Tumid every single morning and every single afternoon at the beginning and close of business in the Mishkan. But the one difference is that Pesach Mitzrayim was a Shlamim, and the Karban Tamid is an Ola. And again, going back to what we just talked about a little bit earlier, the difference between the two, how the Karban Shlamim is about entrusting one's fate to Hashem and being happy with the lot that Hashem has given him in life, whereas the Ola refers to striving ever upwards towards Hashem. That's the difference between Mitzrayim and now. In Mitzrayim, we brought the sheep, we had nothing, we were nothing, and nothing came to us from our own power. We gave ourselves over willingly to Hashem, entrusted ourselves into His care so that He would then elevate us to a higher level. But now, having left Mitzrayim, now having a Mishkan or a Mikdash, where we are able to do this avoda, this carbon is transformed into an ola, and a carbon of action, where no longer are we necessarily just putting ourselves in Hashem's hands and letting Hashem do all the work, but now we ourselves are striving upwards to fulfill our mission, to fulfill the goal. Hashem adopted us as His nation, and Hashem assigned us a task, and that's the Shlamim of Pesach Mitzrayim, where we willingly gave ourselves up for that role, and let Hashem dictate what He would want from us. And now we accept that role, and in the form, we bring the same carbon in the form of an Ola, indicating our active endeavoring to carry out that mission, strive higher, and become closer to Hashem, day in, day out, morning and afternoon and evening, every single day. That's represented by the daily offering of the Karban Tumid.